For this session is by Angelia Sheffield. Angelia is a postdoc again in Stanford University. Can we invite Angelia to come and give the presentation?
Thank you. Well, I have to say thank you for saying, I know it's right before lunch, but at least I'm going to be talking about food, so maybe it can entice your appetite. And I also want to thank I'm happy to be following these last two talks. Sam gave a great introduction to the arsenic issues, and it seems like we're going sort of from the small scale up to the large scale. So, can I advance it just a bit? Okay. So as we all know, rice is an important staple food. It's grown on almost every continent. But as you can see from this map, it's by far grown mostly in southern and southeastern Asia. In Brazil, they grow a lot of rice, but it's mostly upland rice or aerobic rice. In South and Southeast Asia, it's grown in flooded conditions, either rain-fed or through irrigation with groundwater. And if we look at the contribution of a person's diet on a daily basis coming just from rice, you can see in Cambodia and Bangladesh, over 70% of a person's daily calories comes from rice. So it's a very important food source. And I just want to point out the ranking of these countries in terms of rice production. You can see Bangladesh, they grow about three crops a year, and they're ranking number four, whereas Cambodia, really they're only growing about one, maybe two rice crops a year, and so they have room to increase their production, and that's what they plan to do. And I also want to point out that these top four or five countries in Southeast Asia or South and Southeast Asia that are consuming a lot of rice, all except for Laos, is experiencing severe arsenic contamination of their groundwater. So as Sam mentioned, the arsenic source is in the Himalaya Mountains. As those rocks weather and the huge sediment loads are being transported by these major river systems in Asia, they get deposited in floodplains where water sort of flows down, the groundwater is not flushed out as much, and arsenic can be released into groundwater. So here's just a closer-up image of the region. There's been a lot of work on arsenic contamination in Bangladesh in rice. Like I said, there's three crops a year, so they have to use a lot of groundwater for irrigation. And about 100 million people, those are the estimates, are suffering from arsenicosis or some sort of arsenic issue in their groundwater. 60 million of those people are in Bangladesh alone. And it's not to say that the arsenic issue is any less severe in these other countries. It's just that Bangladesh has many more people, so there's more people to be impacted by arsenic. I'm going to focus the rest of my talk down here in the Mekong River in Cambodia. And like I said, the conditions are similar to what you'd find in Bangladesh, except that they're not currently using groundwater for irrigation for the most part. So like I said, when either groundwater that has arsenic is brought to the surface and used for irrigation, or just the simple act of flooding, either one of those processes can increase the amount of arsenic that the plant roots are seeing, which is ultimately how it gets into the grain and can affect humans. So if we think about a soil that has arsenic bound to iron oxides or clay minerals, as soon as that soil gets flooded, the arsenic can be released, and Sam, again, did a great job of talking about those processes, and also arsenic-5 can get reduced to arsenic-3. Both of those species can be taken up by plant roots, but if we look at the arsenic that's in the rhizosphere or in a rice paddy, it would be mostly arsenic-3. There is also reports of minor components of DMA and MMA, and all four of those compounds can get taken up into rice roots. So if we focus on what's happening at the rice root, here in this region, this is what I'm drawing as the parenchyma. So in order for rice roots to respire, because they're grown in flooded condition, they have to bring oxygen basically from the surface down to their roots, and they do that by hollowing out cortical cells, which creates basically a straw under the water where oxygen can diffuse into. And as that oxygen leaks out into the rhizosphere, it can encounter reduced iron and precipitate as iron plaque. Some of my previous work has shown that iron plaque isn't actually coating evenly on the entire root system. So you can have areas where arsenic compounds can get taken in through different processes. So arsenic 3 can get taken into roots because of its similarity to salicylic acid at pHs that you would find in most rice paddies. And we all know that phosphate is arsenic 5 is an analog for phosphate, so they get taken up into rice plants through phosphate transporters. And I mentioned DMA and MMA, while usually minor components, can also get taken up by these aquaporin channels. So when we think about what influences arsenic entry into plants, it's a combination of many factors. And of course, the soil chemical conditions are going to play a huge role in the arsenic release and what the plant root sees, but also plant variety will be a big factor, and some of the plant physiological processes, because different varieties can have different extents of parenchyma formation, different leakiness of the roots, so different amounts of oxygen that gets released influencing iron plaque formation, and also different differences in expression of the transporters where arsenic compounds can enter. So this is what the variety, the variation in arsenic in grains looks like. This is data that I've just compiled from the literature, except for the Cambodia data, which is which I had to dig out of a dissertation that's not published yet. And in the dark, so this is just grain, total grain arsenic in different countries. And the purple is the maximum amount that was found in these market surveys. And the blue is the minimum amount, with the red representing the average. And basically, these researchers just went out, purchased rice from different markets, and then analyzed it. And so it gives you an idea of what people are actually exposed to. But when I put these numbers up here, I don't know that anybody really knows if this matters as far as human health. So what I've done is taken the values of maximum daily arsenic intake that we can have. According to the World Health Organization, that number's about 2 micrograms per kilogram body weight per day. According to the EPA, it's much more strict. It's 0.3 micrograms per kilogram of body weight per day. So if we think about a typical Cambodian diet where they eat 450 grams of rice per day and assume 65 kilogram person, which might be slightly large for a typical Cambodian person, so this is somewhat of a conservative estimate, these lines represent what would be 100% of the daily allowable arsenic intake. So you can see that just by rice alone, even if we're just at the median arsenic in rice that we find in Cambodia, we're already well above what people are allowed to eat according to the World Health Organization. And then I've just also plotted, because there's several studies that were done in California and the U.S. in general, this would be a typical U.S. diet, so we eat rice one time a day, so we're eating less rice, but the regulation is much lower. So this would be 100% also of our daily arsenic exposure. And when we think about drinking water regulations, they don't usually take into account how much people are consuming through food products. So I just want to point out that food products can be really important for not only arsenic, but other compounds as well. So I want to focus attention on Cambodia, which has I think, a very interesting topography and environment to study arsenic, and Scott's group has been, and all the descendants from there have been studying arsenic in Cambodia. This is the Mekong River here, and these are sort of the highlands. As it gets down here and goes out toward Vietnam, we have the floodplains starting here. And you can see that the rice land in red coincides with where these low-lying floodplains are located. Battambang, which is considered the rice bowl of Cambodia, is up in this region here. And what happens is, during the monsoon, this Tonle Sap lake, inland lake, increases in size because the flow actually reverses, and depositing the sediment that contains arsenic all around there, and also all in this region. So this is an arsenic risk map, and you can see that where arsenic is in risk of being in groundwater coincides with where rice is grown in the region. But like I said, in Battambang, there's less risk up in this region, but it's still somewhat substantial. So, like I said, there's not a lot known on how much Cambodians are getting exposed to through rice. And so what I was interested in is just doing a countrywide survey of rice growing in the region and see what these numbers are in the field, and trying to couple that with soil properties sort of before yield starts increasing. Right now they're thinking about increasing yield, and if they're using groundwater that contains arsenic, that might pose a problem. So before that ever happens, and before it turns into a situation that's going on in Bangladesh, what are these levels, and what soil properties can we link them to? So I've gone two times this year. The first set of data I have available to show you, which is taken in this pretty high-risk region down here in this box. Since then, we've also gone sort of around this area, but I don't have, this is very new samples, and I'm still working on processing them. So I'll just focus on showing you some data from this region right now. And this is just a close-up of the area. It's a Google map, and I've just drawn the Mekong River on top, and this is the Pasak here. For those of you who've been to Cambodia, like Ben, I know this is where RDI is located. So we sampled, and here's Phnom Penh, the capital. So we sampled some rice fields in this region, and then we went out across the Mekong over into Prey Vang province and sampled rice in this region. And here are the values. I just want to point out, this is just total arsenic, and the KD is Kendal province, and the PV is Prey Vang province, and the numbers just refer to my own numbering system. But what I want to point out from this graph is that it's variable. Usually, the straw always has more than the husk, and which has more than the grain, so the grain stores the least amount of arsenic. But if you look, the concentration of arsenic in the straw doesn't necessarily mean more arsenic in the grain. For example, if we look at KD2 right here, there's not very much arsenic in the straw, but a large amount of arsenic in the grain compared to, say, KD3, which has more straw arsenic but less grain arsenic. And so basically for the reasons I was talking about before, the differences in soil chemical properties as well as varieties can give huge differences in the arsenic concentrations in the different plant fractions. But what does this mean in terms of human health? So what I've done is I've plotted the grain concentrations, because most people aren't eating the straw or the husk, as a percentage of the daily allowable arsenic intake according to the World Health Organization. So we can see that it ranges from about 20% of a person's daily arsenic intake, based on, again, a diet of a typical Cambodian weighing 65 kilograms, up to about almost 80%. just in these two regions. But remember that the food is just a secondary source. So the drinking water is also where people are going to get most of their arsenic, presumably. And the standard in Cambodia is 50 part per billion in drinking water, whereas here it's just 10. So if we still have a conservative estimate and say that 25 ppb of arsenic in drinking water and do some calculations and just stack on top of that the contribution of a daily arsenic intake from water, we can see that we're now up to about 60 to over 100% of a person's daily arsenic intake. But remember that the drinking water standard is 50, and many of the wells in Kandal province and Prevang province are tested at about 50, and they're safe. So let's say that we're drinking 50 parts per billion in drinking water. So I've just, that yellow line is 100%. So you can see that even just in this small survey, most people are getting either almost exactly or well above their daily arsenic exposure just from drinking water and eating rice. And if this was the US and we did these calculations based on our standards, we'd be at 350 to 600% of our daily arsenic intake. So I'm motivated to look at arsenic in more detail in Cambodia. And what I would like to do is propose management strategies to decrease the amount of arsenic that ultimately gets into the grain. And so I've been talking to some people at USAID about having some test plots in that region. So I'm going to use this opportunity to advertise. If there's any students that would be interested in this, please come talk to me. And then I would just like to thank Dina, Mike Schaefer, and Sarah, who helped me in the field just recently, and Parker, who's here, who helped me dehusk a lot of rice and also helped me in the field. I will say that when you do a market survey, it's much easier because you don't have to dehusk the rice, which is very time consuming. So thank you, Parker. And also Scott, who can't be here, but he's wearing a rice hat in this picture. So thank you guys for your attention. I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Angela, for the nice presentation. So we have some time for questions, please. Yes, please.
When you were doing your plant sampling, did you take into account plant age? So are they all come to maturity at the same time? Grain loading the same?
Yeah, that's a great question. I sampled a lot of different areas, and the data that I've shown you is only plants that were mature and ready to harvest. So
follow up on that. Are they all the same cultivar?
No, they're not. No. And so that's why I was saying, in addition to differences in soil properties, which is part of what we're testing, and I don't have the data to show you, but we're working on it, there are also different varieties. So hopefully when we get all of the data, we'll have similar varieties that we can then directly compare, because we can't compare across varieties.
Other than choosing varieties that have reduced arsenic in the grain, what other management strategies would you consider?
By reduced, you mean decrease? You mean decrease arsenic? Yeah.
We can use different varieties, perhaps, that have lower arsenic concentrations. What other management strategies?
Yeah. I just want to clarify, because arsenic is a redox-sensitive element, so you're talking about decreasing or lowering the amount of arsenic in the grain, not reducing it to arsenic-3, right? So one of the things that I would like to do is to use the fact that arsenic-3, which is the most dominant compound in the pore water that the plants are seeing, it gets taken up into plants by the salicylic acid pathway. So if we can increase the amount of salicylic acid in the pore water, it should decrease the amount of arsenic that gets transported into the roots. And one way we can do that is by using straw, which has higher silicon, which normally doesn't get put back onto the fields, and reincorporate that. And hopefully that will reduce the amount of arsenic that gets taken up into the plant. No, I don't.
So one thing that's interesting about Cambodia is they have
Mm-hmm.
Less than 1 time per hectare. It's actually shocking. And I saw the number, I thought it was wrong the first time. And I wonder how much it's probably both part, but also part of it to management, how different management would influence yield and then also influence arsenic possibly by the reduction of the plant.
Yeah. Well, what following up from that, and also relates to your question, one of the things that we discovered when I was sampling was that most people don't incorporate straw. And I told you that Battambang is known as the rice bowl of Cambodia. When I was we went and interviewed all the farmers and asked them, you know, what do they do with the straw? What do they, you know, how do they prepare their fields? In Battambang, they actually incorporate straw. And the silicon, even though it's not an essential plant nutrient, can benefit the plant in many ways and lead to increased yields because it can have a better resistance toward pests. And usually, silicon addition gives higher yields. So I think that's why